start to make out or something.
Two.
Two.
One.
Five. Four. Three.
Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. My name is Roger Z. I'm your host. It's a great pleasure to do this show every week. I get to hang out with all of my friends, and especially so this week because I've worked professionally with all of you. Pete Hopp is my special guest. He's going to be presenting his original compositions tonight. If you go out anywhere in the Westchester area, you've seen Pete. What's the name of the group? Pete Hopp and the Wallbangers?
Yeah, it has been for years, and I also use as a blues band, Petey Hopp and the Blue Tones.
Okay.
But you can find it all at PeteyHopp.com. So it's pretty easy, PeteyHopp.com. It's got all the schedule and all that stuff.
Not PITI.hop. Okay. Old school.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So why don't you introduce the people you brought with you today?
Well, today I brought a long-standing drummer I've been working with for years, fabulous drummer, Miss J.J. Clark. Jen Clark, she's something else. My good friend Bob Getz, who also I've worked with for many years, and he and I have done some original music before. And you know him also from his own thing, Bob and Norm, or Powderfinger. So, great musicians. I'm excited to play with them. We were supposed to have Chris Burke tonight, who plays organ, as you know, with Jeff Hartwell Band and other people, but he had a death in the family, so he was unable to make it last minute. So we wish him the best.
Tough times. So, Pete, one of the great things that you do is that you mentor people. You are currently kind of a father figure to a whole new generation of songwriters, blues players. Why don't we talk about the venues and the nights that you do this?
Well, currently I host two open jams. One is every Monday in Pleasantville at Lucy's. That's, you know, right in downtown Pleasantville, Cross Street and Police Station, easily accessible from the train.
Be careful what you
come from out of town. Yeah, and it's Cross Street and Police Station. But that I really want to be more like an acoustic, open mic, singer, songwriter thing, because I have tons of songs that I write that I would like to have a format to play. And I know that there's other really talented singer-songwriters in the area that I want to gain exposure to, and I want to create a scene for that, you know. So that's kind of why I did that. And, you know, my philosophy is that, you know, people have mentored me over the years, and I really want to nurture people's talents and get them to the next level. And the other one that I host is up in Hyde Park, New York, which is a bit of a hike from here. But it's a really great open blues jam, pretty much a strictly blues format, located at the Hyde Park Brewery in Hyde Park, New York. And it's been going almost 6 years, I think 6 years this month. And really, anyone in the Hudson Valley who's, you know, blues players and a lot of national players have stopped in, and it's just a great jam with a great reputation. And that jam, more than any other I've done over the years, has a great crowd of people who just hang out to listen. They don't necessarily play. There is a good core group of players, but there's a good group of people who just hang out and listen, which is almost, you have to have that if you want your jam to survive for years, you know, because as some of the musicians I know will tell you, when you host a jam, you get a lot of musicians come in and they order water. And clubs don't make money, you know, giving away water. So, you know, you need to have paying patrons and things like that. And short of having a cover for the jam, which I really don't want to do, it's best that you develop a clientele that likes the music, you know.
Well, I haven't been up to the Hyde Park Brewery. Mm-hmm. But I have been to your Monday night jam at Lucy's in Pleasantville. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
It's a lot of fun, and what I especially like is sometimes you've got players who will come up and accompany people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like John
Cobert.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. He'll play the accordion, mm-hmm, sing along. Rich mm-hmm. Kelly will play the bass.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what's nice is people do originals, mm-hmm, but they also do some cover tunes,
yeah,
and you run it in a timely fashion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, no one stays up there too long. Mm-hmm, everybody mm-hmm. gets to play.
Mm-hmm. I really try, and you know, also another reason, not just original music, but I wanted a place for my friends who are musicians, working musicians, that we could just come out and play what we want to play. You know, as a working musician, you often have to play songs you don't necessarily want to play, but they're what the audience and people who pay you want to hear. So we have a lot of songs that we're into that not necessarily musicians, other than musicians, might be into or know in that case, and we do it just for fun. And a lot of us are, as anyone in this band can tell you, either leaders or, you know, subs, so we can all fit the bill of just about any, you know, situation that arises. So it's nice that we can all kind of change places on that Monday, and sometimes somebody will lead, somebody will back up, and
Okay, Pete, okay. I'm just dying to ask you this. Name one song that gets requested that you don't like to play.
Well, I think everybody knows the top five, which would probably be Brown Eyed Girl, Margaritaville, American Pie, and of course Mustang Sally. You know, those four. And then for blues, it's always, you know, Stormy Monday. But I mean, I play them. I like them. They're nice songs, but I try not to play them unless I'm requested for them. And then, you know, what then you we play them happily.
I like playing Brown Eyed Girl, maybe because I have my own version of it.
Right.
Mustang Sally, mm-hmm. I have trouble singing that first verse. I have trouble right. switching to
doesn't
the four chord.
Yeah, doesn't come out.
I always have to have the bass player signal me on that first
chord. Right, 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 right.
So that's the only reason I don't like that one.
Mental block.
Yeah, so I get lost. But that's funny. Now tell me a song that you want to play, but people don't know.
I got this tons. I mean, stuff like, you know, I'm in a lot of the beat cuts and stuff like that, stuff that were never major hits by even like major artists like the Stones, the Beatles, and things like that. You know, stuff like I like to do Mother Nature's Son by the Beatles, one
great
of my
song.
Favorites when I do my acoustic set, you know. A lot of people don't even really know the song, you know. So that kind of stuff I like to do because they're great songs, they just never got the radio play, and real fans of the music know them and like them. You know, so there are, you know, once they hear it, people kind of say, oh, that was a nice song, who was that, you know, and they'll often get hip to the fact of who that was, and they'll maybe research that song, and or even stuff like, you know, I like John Prine a lot. It's a great songwriter, and offbeat songwriters like that I like to cover that people, especially around here, aren't really playing a lot of. And, you know, I just like the songs, and I like to sing them, and they're an influence on me, and, you know, so I'm lucky that some of my gigs I do have a format where I can do that. And I do get to, you know, at the Kittle House where I play on Thursdays, I can kind of play that because I'm somewhat, you know, just mood music in the background early while people are eating dinner. So I can get away with kind of playing what I want as long as I'm not too obtrusive. You know.
Oral wallpaper.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Sonic wallpaper is what I call it. Yes, exactly.
Rain by the Beatles, I think, is a song that falls into the category.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, every time I go down to your jam on Monday nights, you play four different songs. So I've been down there four or five songs. I've heard four or five times. I've heard probably 25 of your tunes.
Yeah.
I think when I heard you rehearse tonight, I don't even know if I've heard these.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's rock and roll.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. First couple songs, I'll hit you to what they are as well.
I'm just gonna. I'm going to do a couple of original songs. First one's called Fooling. And Neil Young. song is called Misery Loves Company.
We all know that.
Nice job. Now, how did you decide to pick the two songs for this show out of the hundreds of songs you wrote?
Well, to tell you the truth, ease of learning was actually a factor, because you don't really get a chance to rehearse. And we actually only did one rehearsal other than what we did before we got here, as we were here tonight on the stage. You know, just that as a working musician, it's hard to schedule time, you know. So I have songs that have a lot more arrangement, but I just want to keep it fun and simple and just rock and roll. I mean, just pretty easy, you know.
Are these, I know I personally usually like to do more recent songs. Mm-hmm. So these are from your recent batch?
One is not. Fooling is definitely not. Fooling I've had for years. The germination, pardon me, for Misery Loves Company is about 10 years old, but I really only finished it about really a year ago, because songs, for me, they kind of take on their own life and they finish themselves and they finish themselves. I don't press them. When they come out, they finish, you know. So it's fairly recent. I've only really started playing it out live probably 6 months ago. So it's fairly recent.
Cool. You know, I remember talking to you a couple of months ago, mm-hmm. And you actually, a number of years ago, you had a big rock band, you went out on tour.
Not so much on tour, but when I lived in California years ago, we would do the West Coast. We would do, you know, we were based out of LA, we'd do San Diego, you know, LA, San Francisco, Sacramento, places like that. And that was fun, you know, but it was never really, not long term. Never anything long term. I don't know if I can handle it.
What, with those people?
Yeah, well, possibly those people, yeah. Part of that, yeah.
Those, right, those who survived.
Yeah, right.
So you make your living as a musician. You also teach. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I teach guitar and I play gigs. I mean, you know, roughly 5 nights a week. And teaching I do 4 days a week, twice a week at a place called Putnam Music up in Mayapack, which is a nice small little music store. He really makes his money on lessons and teaching in there because you can't really compete with the bigger name places. But he does have stuff that he sells there. And for me, I don't get as much money teaching there, but it's somewhat security because he books everything and he's always trying to fill it up for himself as well as me. And, you know, he also gives me a break on my gear that I use, so it's cost effective in that respect as well. And then privately, I teach 2 days a week, usually going to people's houses in Westchester where I can make more money. But, you know, I have to do all the booking and all that such. And it's tedious at times because I'm constantly on the phone the day before or that day of. And, you know, people are always canceling out and things like that. So, you know, I kind of have my eggs in a lot of different baskets. Gigs, teaching privately, teaching in the store. And, you know, so if any one thing drops out, I have other things to fall back on.
I guess you're hoping for the economy to pick up?
It never hurts. Yeah. It hasn't really affected me too much. But I'm sure it will eventually. It's still in the beginning stages if they say it's going to hit like it does. So, you know, but it doesn't seem that people go out to hear live music as much as they used to. Maybe not in this area. It used to seem that people, you know, as you know, used to be a band 5 nights a week, and every corner seemed like there was a band. And as we've spoken about this before, and DJs have taken a lot of it over, for better or worse. You know, it's better for DJs, I'm sure, but for live bands, it's not as much, you know. But, you know, it is what it is, you know, and it's a changing climate and you have to deal with it.
Well, I think, you know, I'm trying to figure it out, and I think part of it is I think a lot of Top 40 is not band music.
Sure, it's all beatboxes and things like that now, yeah.
Right, so I mean,
almost no rap is with a live band anymore, you know, or ever really, so, you know, that's, anybody's going to listen back, it's going to be a DJ, you know.
Well, I mean, but, you know, one of the things I can say in a positive light is, I mean, well, in a negative light, we've lost all the bar mitzvahs, we've lost a lot of the weddings,
right. But
the dancers are making out like a bandit, because the musicians are losing, but, I mean, now you have, you know, maybe two people behind the turntable and then five people, dancers, who come and pull people
right,
on the
right,
floor.
Right.
So maybe it's better for the dancers.
And I'm fairly lucky because I can work in a variety of situations. I can do solo, duo, trio, and up. So, you know, if somebody wants to downsize and they still want to have live music, well, I can come in as a solo and at least offer live music at a more reasonable price than having a band, you know. I like to play solo, so for me, it's nice I get to do that as well. But, you know, it's not like playing with a band, you know. You do get to feed on the energy and things like that, depending on the band, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
well, this band is spectacular.
Well, one of the great things that that you do is you also play the harp. So
yeah.
you've got that apparatus,
yeah.
So you can do the whole Dylan Neil Young thing, yeah. So that adds. Some guys will play solo guitar and then have like a
loop station.
Have a loop behind them or a whole backup track.
Yeah, I don't really get into that. Not for any other reason that I... Like, same reason, I don't really get into a lot of effects when I play my guitar. I'm pretty much straight through, only because two reasons. Number one, I'm inherently a little bit lazy, and it's extra time to set up and things like that. But it's also, all the experience that I've had with it, there's always a battery going dead, always a cable going dead. There's always some sort of technical issue that has to be dealt with that, if you don't have it, it just doesn't have to be dealt with, you know?
I have one box, and I showed up to gig Saturday night, and of course, the battery's dead, and I didn't have an extra one, but someone did.
Right.
So that was good. But I had a friend of mine, he wasn't working, so he came down, he sat in, and I used one box, and he had this whole rack, and after he said, man, you get such a great tone. Do you have your other boxes hidden behind the amp?
No, just nothing. Most people don't realize the more stuff you have in your signal chain, it actually cuts your signal strength down. You're constantly losing signal strength and an immediacy. I mean, you don't hear the immediacy of the tone. What you play doesn't come out right away. It's the filtered, you know. And
well, I think, that. You know, I think the big guys, they always have two amps, one that's completely clean,
right,
and one that they muddy up however sure. they want to. Mm-hmm.
That's one of my dream systems, have a bi-amp or a tri-amp, you know, this way you can A-B or A-B-C box, so whatever sound you want, you just hit a box, you know, a switching box, not a pedal box,
right.
And then it just takes you to that amp and that sound, yeah.
I mean, sometimes I'll read Guitar Player magazine, I was reading this article by Brad Paisley.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah. He's got a rack 6 feet high.
Right. I mean, he's able to indulge his passions,
yeah.
But I'm like you, I'm a little lazier.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the CDs that you bring to a desert island.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I can answer that, because I don't know. People have asked me this kind of question before, and I don't really have a favorite artist, a favorite guitar player, favorite anything. All I'm going to have to say is that if I was going to bring any discs, there's a limited number. It would have to be something that would be musically extremely dense, that it would take me a long time to really get to understand, because if I'm going to have to listen to the same thing over and over.
It's only 2 weeks on a desk.
Okay, 2 weeks.
So name something dense.
I don't even know. I always like Duke Ellington. I mean, you know, something. One of my favorite albums would be Duke and Louis the Great Summit. There's a lot of great stuff on there. And you know, Duke has an album called New Orleans Suite, which is great. Fantastic thing. And then, you know, it'd be a number of Beatles or Stones albums or something like that that I could, for 2 weeks, I could certainly live with. I mean, you know, it would be a problem.
Cool.
Among many others.
All right. Let me ask you this. Anybody new grabs your attention? Anybody in the past few years?
National or otherwise?
Anything.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm sure there are. There was a kid, what was his name, 20-something, Jamie Cullum. He had some good songs, like style. He's very, very improvisational, kind of jazzy, kind of pop rock thing he does. Got so many.
John Mayer, do you like him?
Yeah, I like John Mayer. He's okay, sure, he's all right. And I like the fact that he's trying to keep blues alive, and I think some people tout him as to be the great blues guitar player, which I think is a lot better, but the fact that he loves the music and he's trying to bring it to attention to the popular culture is really, it's great. I mean, it's great, because if there aren't people like him, then it does go away and people don't know about it. You know?
Yeah. Very interesting. I saw John Mayer play an open mic before his first major label mm-hmm. album. Mm-hmm. It was up the Skybox in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Was it good?
I was with my girlfriend at the time. He opened his mouth, and I turned to her and said, this guy is going to make it.
Right.
You just knew.
Right.
And the thing about him is, he's never captured on an album.
Mm-hmm.
He plays guitar.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anybody play acoustic guitar the way he does. He's like to the acoustic guitar like Jaco is to the bass.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never been... It's like kind of... Like, you know the song Neo.
He hasn't captured it, really.
Yeah, he's more...
Well, that happens a lot. I mean, you hear about that a lot. You know, people don't... What they do live doesn't... Just can't seem to capture it in a recording session for whatever reason. I mean, you know, that does happen a lot. And I know from my own, you know, experiences recording, usually it's you don't have the time to spend to really get comfortable, because time is money in the recording studios, you know. And unless you have a big major label behind you where you can sit there for months at a time and really get your sounds and get comfortable with the room, and play 100 takes until you get the one you want. I mean, it's difficult to get that, you know. And even tonight, you know, my sound is not like what we have on a stage somewhere. It's different, you know. It's a little different.
Well, it sounded pretty good to me. I mean, we took some time doing a sound check. We didn't. I don't think we bum rushed you in any way.
No, not at all.
I think we got a good sound. I want to thank Gary Stukes behind the board. He's he did a good job. Rita usually helps me out too. I go in there at the last minute just to make sure that...
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Right, because my whole idea is that a week from now you'll have something that mm-hmm. you can put on YouTube
right.
or do whatever you
that's
want.
That's the idea. Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for coming down.
My pleasure, thank you.
We will
thank
do you. Part two
okay.
shortly.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Roger. Pleasure.